Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gabbard and Brian Chapman.
Today is February 15th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 162, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gabbard, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chapman, editor, co-publisher, and sometime guy in need of a haircut. How you doing, Jeff?
Just so you know, I think your hair absolutely rocks.
You know, I looked at the pictures we posted today, the Cirque du Mac photos, and when I get hot and sweaty and it's been a couple of hours since I fluffed it up with my fingers, it starts looking pretty grim.
You know,
I'm so high maintenance.
You are high maintenance, but we love you anyhow.
Well, this is a special show, folks. Jeff and I are talking only about Macworld. We actually wanted to record this at Macworld. The timing did not work out.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's a kind of an important thing. And so we wanted to take the time to just go over everything we thought about the show and, you know, talk about, you know, the ways it was great and the ways it was less great and what the future might hold.
That sounds like an excellent wow. It's going to be a really long podcast if I can't even get the word introduction out of my mouth.
Indeed.
Wow. So anyhow, yes, that was an excellent introduction.
So we're recording this on Monday. We are safely ensconced back in our offices.
Yes,
the show is held Thursday, Friday, and Sunday.
No, it was actually Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah, they decided to make the days concurrent, you know.
I was apparently doing some hallucinogenics on Sunday and got mixed up.
You know, that's especially funny coming from you.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the very first thing that I noticed when I walked onto the show floor was the fact that it was packed.
Yes. Now, I think I hit the show floor before you did. And
probably.
Yeah, so I hit the show floor right about noon on the first day. And it opened at noon on Thursday. And it wasn't busy. It was kind of slow. Excuse me. But after about an hour or so, it was really packed. And it didn't take very long for it to get so packed that there were times where I simply could not work my way through the crowds.
Wow. Okay, well, I didn't see the unbusy part for that first hour. I must have come in right after that. As a matter of fact, when I came in, there was a very long line of people waiting to register to get in. And then I got to the show floor itself and was just, you know, blown away by the fact that it was pretty much wall-to-wall people.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. Now, I think the reason it wasn't like that in that first hour was because the schedule worked a little different this year. There wasn't the massive Apple keynote presentation and then the rush from the keynote into the expo hall.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, that was definitely different. Now, and another point that we should make is that, you know, we say it's packed, and it was, but the show floor itself was smaller. There were 225 vendors, roughly, maybe 240, depending on which numbers you listen to. And that's a little bit less than half of what there were last year. So there was less space. And so there were also fewer people at the show. But this is actually still quite important because the packed part comes from how many people are there to see the number of vendors and, you know, how many, from a vendor standpoint, how many people are coming through their booth. And that's what's important for the show going forward. Comparing it to previous years is almost a moot point because it's such a different show from when Apple was here.
That's absolutely right. It really is a completely different show. It was like IDG and Paul Kent, the head guy running Macworld Expo. It's like they took all the playbooks they had, threw them away, and just started over and made a brand new show that just so happens to also be called Macworld Expo.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. And so, you know, like I had a friend of mine ask me about the show, and he said he'd read a report from the AP that talked about, you know, the fact that there were only 225 vendors and how that compared to almost 500 the year before, and how it's gone from a 90,000 attendee show to a 30,000 attendee show, and therefore it was a failure. And that comparison is not it's not even half the story.
No, it's not.
It's less than half the story, because, you know, there are so many factors. So let's actually kind of break this down, Jeff, because okay. I think this is an important issue for people to understand. Last year's show was slower than the year before.
Right, because last year was the first year that Apple didn't have a presence on the expo floor.
No. They didn't do a new product keynote.
That's right. They didn't do the new product keynote. That's
or they didn't do a Steve Jobs keynote.
Right. That's right. It was Phil Schiller. And he did an excellent job with what I consider to be pretty lackluster material.
And there was doom and gloom everywhere, because not only because, you know, Apple was pulling out of the keynote, oh my God, but also because the economy was, we were at the beginning of the tailspin that began in late 2008. Comparatively, now at least it seemed like it was at the beginning.
Right.
So okay. You've got doom and gloom about Apple pulling out. It's going to be into the show, and oh my God, the economy is on the ropes, and we're all going to go out of business. You know, there was a lot of sort of doom and gloom going on last year. So that was going on, and now this year you had a bunch of people on the sidelines that were waiting to see how everybody else did, everybody else that actually ponied up and went to the show.
You know, that could have been a recipe for disaster. Because
if enough people had stayed on the sidelines, it would have been a disaster. Fortunately,
right. Luckily, that isn't what happened.
Right. So, while, again, getting back to the comparison to years past to this year, if you look at just the numbers, the show was a big failure. But what we were looking for, and what I think the vendors that show at Macworld and what IDG is looking for, and to a certain extent even the people that attended are looking for, is how many people are still going to walk through the door to come and see what's there.
Right.
And the fact that they were able to get roughly 30,000 people, those are the AP's numbers, and I imagine they're probably going to end up being pretty accurate. Even Macworld won't release their own numbers until much later.
Right, they have to go through their auditing process and get them as close to really accurate as they can.
Right, but I imagine again that's going to end up proving to be fairly accurate. So the fact that many people came through the doors to a smaller show where Apple wasn't even showing, and where we didn't have some new gee whiz Apple product to wow everybody, that is super significant. And you know, like one of the things that Eric Prentice of Dr. Bot told me is that what matters for me to the show is this to this, and he was like, you know, looking from me to him, you know, it's me to you. Mm-hmm. and it's that guy to that guy. And you know, at that point he's pointing to one of the companies for whom Dr. Bot distributes, talking very animatedly with an attendee that was going through the booth. And he said, those are the connections that matter. And if I can get those connections, I'm going to want to come back. And that's the thing. Those connections, those face-to-face connections were happening constantly, because there were so many people that almost every booth had more people to talk to than they could get through.
That's true. I heard many vendors talk about the fact that they were overwhelmed, you know, like physically overwhelmed with the number of people that were approaching their booths, and that they didn't have enough manpower to deal with the traffic.
Right. And that is the story of this expo. That right. is what is going to make more vendors come next year.
Now, Brian,
and that is why Macworld is going to continue without Apple.
Yeah, I think it will continue. Now, I was going to ask you, did you talk to any vendors that said they were disappointed with the show and weren't coming back?
No, I actually didn't find anyone that said that. There were a few people that are, you know, money is money.
Right.
And, I talked to a couple people, and I'm pretty sure you did too, who who, you know, are hoping to be able to finagle a better deal with IDG because the show is smaller. You know, and you're and that is certainly one mindset. But most of the people I talked to were, you know, delighted with the results and were saying that they were coming back. And I know of at least a few companies who have already committed, and a few of those have already committed to a bigger booth space than they had this year.
Sure. I think by the time the expo ended, there was about 30 companies that had already committed to next year.
Right. And some of those were definitely bigger spaces.
Yes. Now, I did talk to just a couple companies that had mildly negative things to say. But
oh, do tell.
It wasn't like they were really complaining about the show. They just weren't certain if the investment was worth the price. And so they needed to evaluate whether or not it would be worth it not to come back, but what booth size to have.
Hmm. So, well, you know, whenever you have a trade show, there are always companies that decide that it's not worth the hassle, even in the best of times.
Oh, sure. And, you know, and in a year when this could have been just a train wreck, but it wasn't, to come across just like, I think it was only two companies that I spoke to, where they said what they needed to do was figure out if the what size booth was actually going to be the best value for them. And so
right.
They were planning on coming back, but maybe in a smaller space than they had this year.
Right. Right. And we should also stress that not everything was perfect for everybody. I think there were some complaints about it being too difficult to sell stuff.
Yes, I remember hearing some complaints like that.
Yeah, and it seemed like there was maybe even some miscommunication going on back and forth. There were a few, you know, there were definitely a few issues like that. It's not like this was like the dream show where unicorn cheers are raining down on everybody and leprechauns are running around handing out pots of gold.
I want to go to that trade show.
That would be a great trade show to go to. So it's not that everything was perfect. It's just that it was, to me, it was a raging success compared to what I think a lot of people were expecting. More importantly, it was enough of a success that more vendors are going to sign up next year, and I think that, therefore, that'll bring in more attendees.
I think it will. And I think that IDG was able to prove this year that Macworld Expo doesn't need Apple to survive. And, no. And that was a very important thing for them to prove.
Absolutely it was. The people will still come through the door to see what people are showing for their Macs, their iPods, and for next year, their iPads.
Yes.
And their iPhones, of course.
Now, Brian, you said one thing during the expo that that I thought was actually a really important observation. And you said that you saw people smiling.
Did. You know, Jeff, I did. I saw people smiling. I saw vendors smiling, and I saw attendees smiling.
And that's a very big thing.
To me, it was. It was definitely. There was a better vibe in the air, and lots of people used that word completely unprompted by me. And I know that you and I together talked to some people that used that word, again, unprompted by us.
Yes. And that to me was a very important thing because it told me that there was a positive attitude running through the crowd, running through the vendors, running through the instructors. And if you have all three of those groups smiling and happy and excited about what's going on, then you have a success.
Yeah, totally agreed. Totally agreed. And that vibe, you know, I love Apple's products. But to me, I've envisioned almost from the beginning, almost since we learned that Apple wouldn't be here, I've envisioned this show as being one that was a lot more free than it has been in years before. And quite frankly, my experience is, actually, everything I said about the show beforehand, pretty much I was right.
Pretty much. Yeah. And that's why we put you on your throne of judgment, high upon an altar.
Exactly.
And from up here, I decree that Macworld be a success, and that it shall continue its reign of glory, bestowing upon us the benefits of being a Mac user, an iPod user, an iPhone user, and soon an iPad user.
So spake Brian, so shall it be.
So say we all.
So say we all.
but seriously, that you know, I felt that Apple not being there could make all of us be a lot more relaxed about things, and that turned out to be the case. I think it's just, I mean, you know, people were doing their Mac and their iPhone thing, and maybe to a lesser extent the iPod. I think the iPod was less important this year than it has been in recent years. It was definitely an iPhone and Mac show.
It was. And I think next year the iPad will play a big role, which you've already mentioned. When I was on the Mac Jury podcast, Chuck Joyner did a live podcast at the Expo.
Mm-hmm.
He was asking me how I thought the show would look next year. And what I told him was, I thought that they could set it up as the iPad show with iPhone and the Mac Pavilion.
Which is, that's brilliant, dude.
But but if you think about it, that's totally probably what it's going to be like. But
I think it's going to be a three-way show.
Oh, definitely three-way show. And I didn't mean like the Mac is going to be, or Mac software and hardware is going to be relegated to a corner where people have to go and hunt. And you know, do you want to see the Mac stuff? Okay, you have to go through this door. Not like that. But like there will be more of a focus or interest in the iPad and the iPhone. And that makes sense to a degree, because the iPad will still be this new thing.
It will be. And as a matter of fact, I think that one of the things that's going to be going on next year is that Macworld is going to move to Moscone West.
Oh, right. I think that's actually a good thing.
In most ways, it's a great thing, because for the first time ever, everything will be under one roof. It'll be on three floors, but it'll be on one roof. I think the trade show is going to be on the bottom floor. Does that sound right?
The trade show on the bottom floor, and I believe all of the sessions will be on the second floor, and then the third floor will be for the special presentations.
Yeah, the various keynotes.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's going to be a great thing, because it's going to keep everybody together. We're not going to be spread out between the north hall and the south hall. I think one year we actually had some stuff in the north hall, some stuff in the south hall, and some other stuff in Moscone West itself. Yes. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and it was actually, in my opinion, a really bad setup, because that was last year. We had the expo events, you know, the actual show floor events, filling the north hall and the south hall. So there's the big tunnel going between, and you have to leave one vendor area to go to another. And then all of the conference sessions were in the west hall, which means you have to leave the building, go diagonally across the street, and into a completely different building.
Right, which isn't anywhere near as bad as what it used to be in Boston years and years ago, before it ever moved to New York, when the show was actually broken up between two facilities across town. You had to take a bus.
Oh, holy crap.
Yeah, ask Dave Hamilton to tell you stories of that someday. I didn't go to Macworld Boston at that point, but Dave can tell you some fun stories about, you know, jetting across town to try to get to the other show. So it's all going to be under one roof, but there is a trade.
There always is.
And that trade is the show floor, the area where they can put vendors in Moscone West, is smaller even than Moscone North, which is where the show was held this year.
Right. So that means if they're expecting to have an increase in the number of vendors at the show, they're going to have to do smaller booths.
Well, yeah, sort of, yeah. We've got so the backstory there is that part of Moscone North was, you know, blocked off. This is true of every trade show. You don't want to see acres and acres of empty space when you go to a trade show. So they put up sort of artificial walls at the edge of the space where they are showing, so that you don't see the extra space. I mean, that's what trade shows do.
Right. And it makes sense to have a little extra space because then there's like staging areas and you know, right. just administrative stuff they need.
Right. Now, at Moscone West, now Paul Kent told us that his goal was to double the number of vendors next year. So he wants to basically have at least 450 vendors.
Okay. That's right.
All right. And if they get 450 vendors in Moscone West, the place is going to be packed. And that'll be a great trade show, I might add. But the problem is I don't see how there's going to be room for even more. And this is kind of, this has been a long belabored point that I've been trying to make, and I apologize. But talking about the iPad, I think the iPad is going to be such a big deal that I think everybody and the brother is going to want to be at Macworld, including a bunch of new vendors.
That totally makes sense. And
I wonder where they're going to be able to put them.
I don't know. But based on the companies that were talking about iPad-related products this year, and we can't even pre-order an iPad yet.
Right.
Yeah, just think about what it's going to be like once people can actually get them in their hands.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Next year's show is going to be really big. And, you know, there's going to be more Mac users than ever. There's going to be more iPhone users than ever. And, of course, we're going to have this new product, the iPad. It's going to be a big show, and I think they're going to sell out whatever it is. I think they're going to sell out Moscone West. That's what I really think. They're going to sell out Moscone West, and it'd be interesting if they ended up having to rent a little bit of Moscone North or South for the additional space.
That would be interesting to see. Okay, so I'm going to be the devil's advocate for just a minute because we've been talking all of the positive stuff. Now, with everything we've said, and I really do think the show will be a success next year, here's how it could actually fail and completely fall apart.
Okay.
Let's say that the vendors that that are here or were here this last week decide that the conversions they were getting into sales on the expo floor and then in the, you know, like that month window after the expo when people are still hyped up and buying stuff based on their expo experiences, what if they decide not to come back for whatever reason? Like they think it's too expensive or they think they
or
didn't...
Or they're stupid.
Or they're stupid. They didn't see the numbers they want. And then we see the people that waited on the sidelines this year deciding, you know, we were just fine not being vendors at the show officially and like meeting people at some other location we've set up. And then you have all these vendors not doing their part to support the show. And realistically, that's where the majority of the money comes from to make a show like this happen. If that scenario were to play out, then I think that Macworld Expo would have to become Macworld Conference, and it would just be an event that people go to for classes and seminars, and there would not be an expo part at all.
Well, I don't think that'll happen next year, but it could happen cumulatively over the next two years. This year and next year, you know, the combined effect. Because we know that there were a couple of companies that found out how many people were at Macworld and how many press. I think the there were 600 members of the press that registered.
Yes, from around the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's huge. That there were companies that found out that the show started off as a raging success, sent PR people down to San Francisco, you know, to book on the spot suites to try to meet with people that were there off the show floor.
Yeah, and the thing is, they were too late because our dance cards were already full.
Yeah, for most people, your dance cards become full pretty early, and you know that kind of thing. That to me is just, you know, it's ballsy.
That's way to put it.
It's ballsy. And the reality is, I mean, the aspect of what you're talking about is the fact that if we want the show to be a success, that means that companies have to directly support the show.
Right.
And that's one of the things that Dave was talking about on Twitter this morning.
Yes, yes. And I think that we will see a lot of companies supporting the show, and we'll see companies that have exhibited in the past but sat out this year. I think we'll see them back. And I have a feeling that companies that chose to exhibit at CES instead of Macworld, many of those companies will return too.
Yeah, because they're going to have realized that that you know, if they're not looking for distribution deals or additional retail space, that CES isn't the place for them.
Right, right. And I know this year going to CES for some of those companies truly was an experiment, because I was asking companies and they said, yeah, you know, we're testing this year and we're figuring out which is the right show for us. And that's totally cool, because that's business and they need to figure out where to best invest their money. And if it turns out CES is the right place and that's all they can afford, okay, good. But if Macworld's the right place, I hope they come back.
Yeah, I anticipate the CES iLounge Pavilion to be smaller next year, and that Macworld will be substantially bigger. That's what I think will happen.
Yes, and if the iLounge, whatever, pavilion, iPod thing at CES is smaller next year, that will be very noticeable, because it didn't feel that big to me this year.
Mm, that's interesting. All right, so a couple more things. I think that the non-Big Bang product feature presentations were a huge hit.
Yes, I think that they did a really good job of finding the right people with the right topics to create entertaining events.
Yeah, that sort of shift from it being a new product event to it being much more about, you know, we Mac users.
Right.
But, you know, Kevin Smith's thing was full. David Pope's thing was full. And there was a lot of buzz afterwards about how great David Pogue's feature presentation was.
Yes, there was. And then the iPad event they did, was that Jason Snell's event?
You know, I didn't go to that one, I can't remember off the top of my head who did it, but it was definitely supposed to have been a success.
Well, I know that they had two overflow rooms that were also filled to capacity and people standing out in the halls to try and participate in that. And actually, our own Ted Lando was on that panel.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. So I actually went back over to the expo hall while the iPad event was happening, and it was kind of funny because it was really quiet on the expo floor. And I was talking with a couple vendors, and they were going, you know, Thursday and Friday, it was just packed nonstop all day. And Saturday seems to be really down because it was busy, and then all of a sudden everyone's gone. We don't know what happened. Well, they didn't realize the iPad presentation was going on, and it drew so many people that there was a noticeable lull in activity on the expo floor.
That's an okay thing, though.
Yeah, that's totally fine, because that shows that the Macworld Expo people totally nailed the topic that people wanted to hear about. But as soon as it was over, it was just like this wave of people just rushing back in, and it was back up to the same crazy packed thing we had on Thursday and Friday.
I remember walking out of the press room, walking past the feature presentation room, and whoever was on stage was making a bunch of jokes.
Oh, I know exactly who that was.
Yeah, and of course that was, if you're wondering what I said naughty words when you heard that beep, because it was Kevin Smith on stage. And he was, of course, making his usual. He was doing Kevin Smith.
He was totally doing Kevin Smith, and apparently, some 14-year-old boy asked him about some aspect of movie making, and Kevin Smith told him, if you can do that when you hit your 40s, women will give you. and I'm sure that the beep people just heard, they're wondering what will women give you.
So figure it out.
Yeah, you can figure it out, or you can find me at Macworld Expo next year, and I'll tell you.
Yes, we will tell you off of our family friendly show.
Right,
mostly family, semi family friendly.
Yeah.
Now I should also mention. Well, you know, actually, let's do this. Let's take a break for our sponsor right now. And talk about our brand new sponsor. And then when we come back, let's talk about some of the great products we saw.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, cool. So we do have a brand new sponsor. We're very, very excited about this because it's their first time to well, obviously they're brand new, so of course it's their first time. But it's the folks at GoToAssist. And GoToAssist Express in particular. And they are sponsoring us, and we are super excited about it. Now, this is a brand new product for us, but we here at TMO have used it. It's fantastic. And what this well, actually, Jeff, why don't you tell us what it does?
Okay, so the deal is, this is an application that you can use to remotely control and essentially fix someone else's computer without having the person that you're trying to help understand how a network works and how remote access and things like that need to work. This takes care of all of the difficult stuff for you. And essentially what you end up doing is generating this like one-time key that is, gets sent to them. And then when they double-click on the key, it creates this this link between your computer and their computer, and it's a secure link. And so then right. you can remotely do things on their computer, fix things for them. So it's a great tool, like if you're an IT person or if you're a consultant and you're working with clients and by remotely, you know, not even across the country. It could be across the city. And you can use it to take care of a lot more people in a lot
like
less
your
time.
Mom.
Or like your mom, yes.
Or your brother-in-law who, you know, just really can't seem to pull his head out of his rear end.
Right. Well, I was thinking couldn't pull his head out of his USB port. Because we are a family-friendly show, mostly.
Yeah, so it's made by Citrix. These are the guys that make GoToMyPC and GoToMeeting. Been around for a long time. You know, they kind of get this whole thing here about being able to VPN to someone else's computer,
right? Without having to know what VPN means.
Exactly. That's specifically what this product is about. GoToAssist Express is totally aimed at the person on the getting connected to side. Doesn't have to know what they're doing.
Right.
Right, so that's good. So we'd like to welcome them. If you go to gotoassist.com/machine, that's gotoassist.com/machine, that's our page.
That's right. We have our own special page. Isn't that cool?
We do. And you can basically try it for 30 days and see how it works.
Yeah, so go check it out. It's really cool. And try it out with someone that isn't computer savvy, and you'll probably be impressed with how easy it is for them to follow the instructions and let you remotely access their computer.
Right. So give them a warm welcome. We appreciate their sponsorship here at the Context Machine, and yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So let's talk about now. Let's talk about some of the cool stuff that we saw on the show floor, because that's one of the biggest reasons why people go to the expo.
It is, because that is where you're going to be able to go and look at a bunch of really cool stuff.
For instance, I'm on a new microphone from the folks over at Blue Microphone.
And I'm glad you have that microphone, because it's one that I was able to look at CES, but couldn't actually get our hands on one until Macworld Expo.
Yeah, and it almost got an Editor's Choice Award, which we're going to talk about, but that's actually why I'm missing it first, or mentioning it first. We had some other projects edged out, but it's a really cool microphone. In short, by the way, this thing is sort of like the pro version of the Snowball.
Right.
Does that sound right?
Right. So, yeah. So, for those of you that haven't had a chance to look at this mic yet, it is a USB microphone. So, it has all of the hardware built into it so that you don't need to have like XLR inputs and phantom power and all that. Just plug the microphone in and it works. And it's also the first USB microphone to earn a THX certification.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. And it's got a headphone out. So it basically acts as its own little audio interface. So I've got, I basically have my headphones plugged into the microphone, which is itself plugged into my computer, and it's got a nice, very, 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 very nice desk stand, and it's got a mute button right on the front, and it's got a volume control for the headphones right on the front. It's got a gain control that's really easy to access that's on the back. It's got four different settings for how the microphone actually works. It's got three circuit boards inside that are actually controlling a lot of these functions, and I'm pretty happy with it. But now I do probably sound a little bit different. I think that the Heil microphone that I was using before, it's a different kind of mic. It's not a condenser microphone, whereas the Yeti is.
Right. So of course you're going to have some different audio quality.
It's a different audio, but the convenience of having the condenser microphone just sitting on my desk is definitely a cool thing. So I'm super excited that they're letting me try this thing out.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll be doing a review on it pretty soon. Oh, and cool. So they were showing that at CES, like you said, but it's shipping now.
Yes. Yeah. So and it's reasonably priced too. I don't remember the exact price, but I know it's under $150.
It's $149. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
It's right at $150.
Okay.
And yeah, which is, I mean, for what you're getting, it's actually it's amazing. The folks at Blue know what they're doing. They're a really cool company, and they're one of the companies that Dr. Bot distributes. And Dr. Bot only works with great companies.
Yeah, that's true. And
so they were also showing off the Mikey too.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to look at that one?
Yes, I did get to see the Mikey 2, and I think it's a great improvement over the original Mikey. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that ship so we can get our hands on one and test that also.
Why don't you tell them about it?
Okay, I think I will. I'll do it. Okay, so the Mikey 2 is a microphone that connects to the dock port on your iPhone or iPod Touch or any other iPod that can take the audio microphone input stuff and then let you record directly to your memory. And the microphone can be aimed, and it has a really nice audio quality. And you can even use it as a stand. So like if you're going to start recording, you can set up your iPhone or iPod with the Mikey attached and just let everything stand up.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't see that part. But like one of the things you can do with it is it flips back the Mikey 2 versus the Mikey 1. It'll bend all the way back, so that if you're taking a movie with your iPhone, you can use
now it. Now you have a directional microphone for it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what this thing is. By the way, Jeff said that it was a microphone that you attach to your iPhone, and yeah, you've got one already built into the iPhone, and quite frankly, it's a good one. But the Mikey 2, yeah, it's a lot better, and it has different applications. It's got different settings for, you know, recording in a lecture hall versus recording a face-to-face meeting across a desk. And one of the big things that they've done is tweak it for recording in, say, like a concert or a very loud venue, assuming it's legal to record, of course.
Of course.
For instance, if you were at an Atomic Love Bomb show.
Oh, my God.
You could totally record it and then stream it, and we'd be happy.
All right, so I'm going to totally derail this for a minute, and I have to say, getting to see the Atomic Love Bombs live on Friday night at Red Devil Lounge was such a treat.
Ah, thanks, man.
And, I mean,
thanks. We had fun. It was a great audience too.
You and the rest of the band, you guys were just on fire. It was wonderful. So anyone that's in the Bay Area, watch for performances or for gigs when the Atomic Love Bombs are going to be playing, and go out and support the band, not only because Brian is in it and he's an incredibly talented musician, but because it's a really good band.
Thanks, man. And we were able to raise, just our band alone, we were able to raise $600 for Doctors Without Borders.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was just great being able to participate in an event like that, and you know, we were really excited that everybody that came out to support us, and that was fantastic. But you know, Chuck Latournis, who is writes for us and is also in the Macworld All Stars, was at the show, and at one point he streamed I think it was the solo from Get the Ya-Ya's Out through Ustream. And if he'd had a Mikey 2, which isn't actually shipping yet, it would have sounded a lot better.
Yes, it would have. And it's so small. I mean, you can throw the microphone in your pocket when you're not using it.
Yeah, yeah, it is really small. It's a cool device. I like the guys at Blue. They make really high-end mics, but you know their foray into the consumer space, starting with the Snowball, has been, I think, fantastic.
It has been. Yeah.
And why don't we? Well, let me actually go to one of my choices for an Editor's Choice Award.
Okay, that sounds great.
Which is called the Toonbug.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah, the Toonbug, and I've since been able to play with it, and it is indeed cool. The Toonbug is this little device. It's like an inch and a half on the side. It's three-sided. It's made out of metal. It's pretty. It's got a little heft to it because, well, you need that because we're dealing with sound. I've been calling it a speakerless speaker.
I think that's a great way to describe it.
Because what it does, it's designed to transmit sound waves not through the air to your ear, but to the surface the device is resting on, so that that surface becomes a resonating surface, or as they call it, a flat panel speaker, that then actually makes the sound for your ear. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it's like an induction sound system.
Yeah, so. You know, it allows you to carry around speakers for your iPod or iPhone without having to carry around speakers, because this is this little device. And as long as you have something like that, so far I've actually found the cardboard boxes seem to be the best.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like my desk, didn't quite resonate as loudly as I thought it would, in that it's big. Although maybe if I took all the crap off my desk, maybe it would. Now, but that's another story.
What's your desk made out of?
Particle board, compressed board.
Now, my desk is glass. I wonder what it would sound like if I put one on my desk.
It would probably sound great. But you know, I tried it on some cardboard boxes, and it sounds really good. And Eric Prentice, again, the president of or the CEO of Dr. Bot, told me that he found that his coffee maker has great tone.
Well, there you go.
Which is cracking up.
I should have picked one up at the show so that I could test it on my desk and let you know how it sounded.
You should. I bet they'll send you one. But what I really like about this thing is that it's new. It's new. It's different. You know, I'm not familiar with anyone who's done any kind of similar product. And you know, it's not going to sound as great as like a real speaker system, but it's just so portable, and it sounds good.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it's using whatever surface it's on.
Yeah,
to make sound.
Yeah, it's really trippy. So I was really excited about that. And oh, and they have another one, by the way, called the Shake, the Toonbug Shake, that is a Bluetooth enabled device. I don't think it's shipping yet. It's got another couple of months on it. But the very specific application that they were showing was on a bicycle helmet. So you've got this attachment that would stick through suckers to your bicycle helmet, turning your bicycle helmet into a big speaker.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Good stuff. It's good stuff. So that was the folks at Toonbug. Actually, Toonbug is the product line. The company is called the Unmemorable Global Silicon Valley Global.
That has a catchy ring. I like Toonbug better.
Toonbug, and you can find it at toonbug.com.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so one thing that I found that I thought was kind of cool was from a company called Hypermac, and it's actually a line of products, and this ended up winning an Editor's Choice Award. They have a series of batteries, portable rechargeable batteries, that you can use to charge your Mac laptop or your iPhone or any other device that has like a USB charger. And
okay,
so you know, so no, keep in mind I said a Mac laptop. It actually comes with a MagSafe plug.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so the HyperMac batteries, they come in a series of different sizes, and actually I ended up picking one up at the expo, so I'll be doing a review on that. And I picked up one of the mid-size ones, And some of the batteries can give you like 25 hours of runtime on your laptop. And I mean, that's wow. that's really significant. So if you're going to be somewhere for where you need to do a lot of extended computing, and you know there won't be any outlets, this is a really cool way to make that happen. Now, they also do some smaller batteries that are, you know, like portable hard drive size, and then some that are sort of like a really nice lighter size. And those small ones, they even have a dock connector built into them, so that you can charge an iPhone or an iPod just by plugging the thing in, no extra wires or anything needed. And the nice thing about those is that they're small enough that they're easy to throw in your pocket or into a side pouch on your suitcase or carry-on bag. So you always have these if you're somewhere where you need to just recharge your device. And they also make them in colors to match all of the current iPod Nanos.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I really liked those. It was a really nice product lineup, ranging from everything to charge your iPod Nano all the way up to make your 17-inch MacBook Pro run for hours and hours and hours.
Gotta like it.
Yes.
So tell me about Office 2. Now, that was something that you and Dave worked on more than I did.
Oh, okay. So Office 2 is this cool little application.
Or is it Office Squared? Which is it?
Oh, Office Squared. How funny. I never even realized that. But it totally makes sense because the company is called Byte Squared.
Right.
All right. So if you go to the iTunes store and you search for Office 2, all one word, so Office and the number 2, you'll find it. It's a cool application for the iPhone and iPod Touch that gives you a Microsoft Office compatible application suite. So you can view and edit Word, Excel, and PowerPoint compatible documents.
And create.
And create, yes, you can create documents. And it can sync with Google Docs. So you can create documents on your Mac and push them to Google Docs. You can work directly in Google Docs. And all of that content you can access and use on your iPhone or iPod Touch, or you can create it and then send it back and ultimately work on it on your Mac. So you can actually create a Word file on your iPhone that can get back to your Mac without you having to do any weird hoop jumping in the process.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's like a really, really versatile application, and the interface is set up so that it's actually functional on an iPhone or iPod Touch. And it wouldn't surprise me if they make a version that has an interface for the iPad when it comes out too.
Right.
That seems kind of like a no-brainer to me. But that was a really cool app.
And then now one of the older apps that we gave an Editor's Choice Award to was BusyCal from BusyMac. But that's because it wasn't shipping last year. They had showed it, but it wasn't shipping yet.
Right. And had it been shipping, it probably would have won an award last year.
You're right. Well, it definitely would have, for sure. I mean, and Dave's nuts about this app. BusyCal is basically an iCal replacement. Or an iCal Pro is how...
That's how Dave describes it.
They describe it. Right.
Yes.
That's how they describe it. He quotes them.
Okay. Well, now I know where he got the line. Okay.
And their company's has some people that come from the original Now Up to Date team. And Now Up to Date was just a great product in its day.
Yes, it was. It was just awesome. Now, the feature that I'm most excited about with BusyCal is that it has a built-in calendar sharing server. So if you're on a local network and you need to be able to have collaborative calendars between multiple people, it's just built in. You don't have to go and buy Mac OS X servers. You can get iCal server. You can just use this. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
And since it uses the same iCal database, if you have people that are doing the shared calendars, you know, like through .Mac, or excuse me, mm-hmm. Mobile Me, you can still access those. And if at some point you decide that you need to be using just iCal for whatever reason, you're like maybe you're at a company where they let you try BusyCal, but they're saying, no, we've standardized on iCal, so you have to use that. It's not a big deal. You just stop using BusyCal, start using iCal, and you keep going. You would just lose the extra data that BusyCal can store.
The extra functionality.
Yeah, that's right, the extra functionality. And since it uses that iCal database, you don't have to worry about doing anything different to be able to have that stuff sync up to your iPhone or iPod Touch.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so it looks like a really cool application.
Yeah, it is. I know Dave's nuts about it, and he was so excited that it's been shipping since the last Macworld and was thus eligible for an Editor's Choice Award, and we were happy to give it to him. Now, you know, one of the apps, and I wasn't able to get over to see them in time, to be honest, but fortunately Dave and/or you did, and that was the folks that make CarMD.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. It's like a little computer that you can plug into your car, and then it takes all of the computer data from your car. So, like, if you're having dashboard lights come on for warnings and stuff, and you're trying to figure out what the problem really is, plug this into your car, and it'll download the data, and then your Mac can read that data and tell you what the error codes mean, so you know what the problem really is.
Right. So you plug it into your car, it grabs the data, you take it to your Mac, you plug it into your Mac, and then using their software.
Exactly. And it takes the data and actually tells you what it means. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, when your check engine light goes on and you're wondering what it means, you can find out now on your Mac.
Yeah, so you'll know right away just how expensive the fix is going to be.
Yeah. Exactly. What other cool products did you see?
Let's see. Hold on. I have to look at my notes real quick, which I happen to have right here. Let's see. Oh, the iFi Pro X2 card.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that don't know what the iFi cards are, they're little SD camera cards that have Wi-Fi built in. So you can take photos, and then if you're on a Wi-Fi network, they can be pushed out to your MobileMe galleries page, or to Flickr, or to other servers. If you're on a network where it can access your computer, it can dump them straight into iPhoto if you want. So that's really cool. What I love about the iFi Pro is the X2 is that it supports RAW. And for photographers, that's a big deal. Most people,
right,
excuse me, with point and shoot cameras are probably doing JPEG images on their digital camera. But when you get more serious and you want to make sure that you have the best image quality you can possibly get, then you want to start shooting your images in the RAW format. And since RAW has a bunch of different characteristics based on the camera manufacturer, there's some extra things you have to do to make sure that your camera cards can handle the RAW files correctly when you're doing more than just storing a file. And since the iFi cards do more than simply store a file, that's something they had to work on. So they figured it out, they have it working, and the iFi Pro X2 does that, and there you go. So now you can get the same cool functionality that you get with wireless image synchronizing on the other cards, but now with RAW data support.
That's really cool.
Yes. And did you get a chance to see Bills from Power Base?
I didn't. John Braun is the one who discovered that little gem for us.
Okay, so he knows more about it than we do, but I can talk semi-intelligently about it.
And oh,
cool. So the deal is, it's an application that lets you track and manage bills that you have to pay. And it has this really slick, easy-to-use interface. And you put all of your account information in, and then when it's time to make payments and all of that stuff, it can give you the proper alerts, and it lets you know how much you're supposed to be paying, where it's supposed to go, all that stuff. So it's a very easy-to-use application, which, in my opinion, anything that's supposed to remind you to give someone else money better be really easy to use, or you won't. And that's
you just won't use it. Yeah, it has to be easy to use, or you just won't use it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this is. So it's a great tool for keeping track of your bills and other monetary debts that you have, and then making sure that you're staying on top of all of that.
Right. And was there one more award that we handed out? You've got the list in front of you. I don't.
Yeah, I was just double checking. And yes, there was the new Power Charge and Sync Plus, which is a portable, just a little, you know, like a hand-sized battery, but it ships with all of the common USB connectors that you would need. So it actually includes a sync cable with a dock connector for, you know, iPhones and the iPod. And then it has like the mini and micro USB cables with it as well. So you can have this one small device that you can charge any of your USB devices with. And it's really easy to use. You know, it even has a little power switch. You don't have to worry about accidentally draining the battery when you don't want to. And it's just a really nice, really versatile little device. And it was priced so that it makes it easy for anyone that's worrying about having like an all-in-one portable emergency battery thing for their electronic devices to be able to pick up.
Oh, that's cool. Now, there's one more thing that we should briefly mention. It wasn't shipping yet, so it wasn't eligible for an Editor's Choice Award. But the guys over at FastMac were showing the IV remote.
That was really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing that ship.
And so what it is, it's an extension of their IV, which is an external battery / case for the iPhone and iPod Touch. And what they've done is developed software that turns your iPhone or iPod Touch into a full universal remote that is, you know, easy to use, easy to set up. You know, it seemed to, from the demo we got, it works really well. Like I said, it's not shipping yet, so we haven't tested it. We only saw it in their controlled environment, but it's definitely a really cool piece of software
and hardware.
Because the battery adds a ton of battery time to your iPhone or iPod Touch.
Yes, and it has an IR port for controlling your home theater stuff, which is nice. Because that way, if for some reason you don't have a Wi-Fi network for that gear, you can still control all of it.
Yeah. So that was interesting, and it'll be interesting to see when it ships. It's supposed to ship for $100.
And it had a flash built in, too.
It did. It had a flash built in. Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah. It was a really, really cool-looking little case. And it was pretty sleek, so it didn't feel like you were putting your iPhone inside a brick.
Right. Always important. And we're actually kind of going long at this point. There was more cool stuff at the show. What you just heard was the list of things that we gave Editor's Choice Awards to. You know, certainly a nice snapshot of what's cool about going to Macworld.
Yeah, I think we came up with a nice little cross-section there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So bottom line is Macworld was a success. Macworld 2011 is going to happen. I think it's going to be bigger, and I don't think we need Apple.
I think it'll be bigger. I know we will both be there.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll see all of you guys there too.
Yep. And there you have it. And with that, why don't you take us out?
Right. Okay, that's the part where I go. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And I am on Twitter at twitter.com/tmobrian. And I'm scrolling down because I didn't have the script open. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for the Mac Observer. And I don't think we – actually, let's use her right now. So make sure – if you want to, like, tell us something, you can shoot us a note at ACM
– pew, 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 pew
– at MacObserver.com. And that sound effect was by Melissa, whom I met this for the first time at Macworld. Another great reason to go to Macworld is you meet all the people that you've met online.
That's right. Melissa is our sound effects specialist.
Yeah, she's our special contributor.
Yes, and apparently our in-house gun specialist now, too.
Yes, our firearms expert.
That's right, our firearms expert.
That's all for this week.
So, of course, please stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I can't see a way out now. I will not go.